That's John Duffy on the piano.
Wow, he's good.
Is it? John, honestly, I don't know why you don't do Madison Square Garden.
It really is just a hobby, guys. You know,
but the passion shows. I mean, you can hear the passion in your playing.
Well, I just want, I wanted to create some background for you.
It's beautiful music.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Steve's News, by the way, sponsored by Victory Auto Wreckers and by Grandview Homes. Grandview Homes wanted to wait and see how the newscast went before they announced their sponsorship, and they were happy with it. So congratulations on that, Steve.
You know, John Duffy could have just walked over across yards and come to my home studio here today.
It would have been easier.
I hadn't thought of this, Wendy, but this is that would have been a great idea. I'm not a very good problem solver in that way.
Can I let you in on a secret, John, that nobody knows until now? The Tribune is moving. WGN is moving, and we're moving to Wendy's house. That's the location we all chose.
That's ideal.
It's going to be so easy.
That's going to work out for us.
I know. New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Now, one of the things we want to discuss today is this. New Year's resolutions have become an almost must for many people. As the new year approaches, they go, I got to do something to better myself. I'm going to make a resolution. I'm going to stick with it all year and be a better person.
Yeah.
But you say that's not such a good idea, is it?
Well, first of all, I read this statistic the other day that resonates. By February 1st, 8% of people keep their resolution.
8%.
From 8%. And so you think about what goes wrong. And here's the trajectory as far as I can tell. We start in December, and we start with the parties, and we start with all the, you know, holiday stuff. And it's emotional, and it's stressful, and it's draining, and it's great, mm-hmm. and it's fun. Mm-hmm. And then immediately in the wake of that, on January 1st, you know, when most of us are hungover and struggling, we expect, I'm going to create a whole new me starting today.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm already seeing people at work who are disappointed in the way their year has gone. And this is typically a time of year when it's cold and it's dark and we're kind of on the back end of holidays. We've still got some family around and we really just want to hang out
right.
and relax. And I think we need to give ourselves permission for a little while to do that. So the resolution itself, this idea of starting right away, I don't think it really works with our chemistry very well.
It's a lot of pressure. You're putting a lot of pressure on yourself.
Way too much pressure. Yeah. Undue pressure.
And then you feel so bad when you do break that resolution. If it's day one, if it's day 20, you say to yourself, wow, I really thought I could stick to this, and I'm not strong enough to stick to it.
Yes, and it has that kind of falling off the wagon feel to it. Like, you know, it didn't work out. Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Instead of like, I'll try again in a couple of weeks when I feel more like I'm on my game.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense.
And you can better yourself. It doesn't have to be January 1st. I quit smoking on November 12th. No day. It's just all of a sudden I'm like, I'm going to quit smoking before knee surgery. And now that's one resolution I don't have to worry about on January 1st.
Brilliant.
That's so good.
Can't you just do it any time of the year just to try and better yourself? And I guess that my question to you is, everybody wants all or nothing. Like, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to eat better. You really have to take it in small steps or you really are going to fail.
You do. It has to be incremental because and some people are so vague. I want to be better. I want to lose weight. And that's so vague that by January 10th, that doesn't mean a whole lot. If you're really clear, you have these measurable, achievable steps and you say by January 30th, I want to get to the gym 8 times.
Yeah.
If you've never been before.
Yeah.
And you can say, okay, I did that. That's successful. Now in February, I'm going to do a 10. And in March, I'm going to do a 12. Then you've got a shot. If you say, I'm going to lose weight this year, or I'm going to get in shape this year, it's really hard to really measure that and hold yourself accountable to that because it's so vague and life takes over, right? Because whatever stopped us last year is probably going to stop us again this year.
Right.
Yeah.
Is the key to that, John, I noticed you increased your increments. Like you said, I'm going to work out 8 times this month and 10 times next and the 12. Is that part of the key to it?
Listen, I always, when I'm working with somebody, I always want to build in wins. So even if it's like small increments, if it was 3 or 4 times in this,
right.
if you've never been before. I worked with a guy who hadn't been running in 20 years, and he started walking around the block once, and then twice the next night, and then 3 times the next night, and the guy ran a half marathon after about a year. So if you work in these little increments, eventually they become big deals, and you feel like every day or every week is a win
right.
instead of like, I blew it. I just couldn't do it this time.
You know what I see every year in January? The health clubs or the gyms are filled to the rafters with people who have made a New Year's resolution. This is the year I'm going to take care of myself a little bit better. I'm going to work out more. And I always see people that are very awkward and don't know what the machines do, and they just kind of walk around and look around. And I give those people so much credit because when you're in a room filled with people, that are there normally and know what they're doing and are in really good shape, it's so hard to fit into that environment.
It's intimidating.
Oh,
so
sure.
Intimidating. Yeah, I think it's really, really difficult to get yourself in that space. And I give people a lot of credit, too,
yeah.
who are willing to make that move.
Yeah.
What I usually tell people, though, is that most any gym, I interviewed a guy recently who owns a gym here in the city, and he said, what we focus on is not what you look like, but that you're here. The
yeah.
fact that you're here is the win. And so everyone's here to support you, you know? And nobody's paying that much attention to whether you're overweight or whether you're clumsy on the machines and you don't know how to work them.
Right.
Most people are just proud of you for being here.
Right.
You know?
Right, right,
yeah.
right. Is there anybody that you would suggest that they should make a New Year's resolution? You've already said it's not a good idea, but is there anybody out there that you say to yourself, but this is kind of a jump start for this person. Maybe they should.
Yeah. I think I don't mind that arbitrary idea of, hey, new year, new me kind
yeah.
of thing. The problem that most people have is they start off running so hard, right? I have to start on January 1st instead of saying sometime in January, I want to get going. And what people focus on is what they want to achieve instead of how they want to feel. And this may seem like psychobabble, but if you say, like, I want to feel strong, I want to feel healthy, I want to feel lean in the new year, if you
mm-hmm.
if you put words like that to it instead of, like, I want to lose X number of pounds,
mm-hmm.
then I think you can kind of dig into that and work toward that feeling, and you'll feel more success than you will if you have this kind of arbitrary number that you want to achieve.
What is it about the psychology for us of saying to ourselves, it should start on January 1st, and not even January 1st. I know a lot of people will start their diets, or if there's something you're trying to change about yourself, it's the first of the month, or
yeah.
it's on a birthday or something.
Or a Monday.
Or a yeah. Monday.
Right,
yeah,
right,
why?
Right. We like those kind of benchmarks, right? We like something that we can measure by. And January 1st, as arbitrary as it is, feels to us like a new beginning, right?
Yeah,
so,
I guess so.
Our birthdays sometimes feel like a new beginning,
yeah.
January 1st, certain anniversaries, and we want to work from that and be able to measure progress over the course of a year. I don't mind that a whole
yeah.
lot, you know, but as long as it's not, I expect too much of myself
right,
right away. Again, it's arbitrary. So, Wendy, to your point, I don't mind the idea of saying I'm starting Tuesday, and,
yeah.
you know, and hopefully by, you know, a month from now, I'll feel better and I'm going to work toward that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you set goals for yourself that are realistic, for instance, my resolution this year, I'm not going
to
eat cauliflower.
Be nicer to people.
No.
What? You're not eating cauliflower?
I'm not going to have any cauliflower in 2018. Now, that's an easy one for me because I can't stand cauliflower and I don't eat it regularly.
And you achieved it in 2017, I
did it. This,
yeah.
will be, this will be the 38th year in a row,
You're
actually.
Out of roll.
I've been able to pull this off. So, yeah. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more with Dr. John Duffy. If you have any questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. He's very, very helpful. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dr. John Duffy is in studio with Wendy and myself. He is a clinical psychologist, best-selling author of The Available Parent. He's a life coach. DrJohnDuffy.com is his website. So along with John talking about New Year's resolutions, we should also address the fact that a lot of people, as exciting as the holidays are, there's sort of a dip afterwards. I guess it's a post-holiday depression is what it's referred to as.
Absolutely.
Right? Why does that happen?
Yeah, you know, I think it happens because some of us just, we get so, it's almost like that moment after a wedding. We get so
yes.
fired up for the moment, right? And we decorate and we get excited and we have all this anticipation. And then in a heartbeat, it's just over. And I think when we're confronted with things like that, it's hard not to slip into a depression, especially when there's nothing kind of filling the gap. So a lot of us are kind of like just back to our old routines and nothing feels like it's changed. And I think we feel like, oh, something big is going to happen because the holidays are awesome. And if nothing big happens, then we feel like let down and depressed. And that's coupled with the time of year, you know, where we tend to be a little more sedentary and a little hanging out, a little less social, hanging out at home a little bit more, watching Walsh on Veep a little more than we would
maybe.
Otherwise.
Possibly.
And
yeah.
12 days of back-to-back freezing, frigid temperatures doesn't help either.
This year's probably going to be tougher for a lot of people. And I've already run into a little bit of it in my office in just a couple of days I've been back. That a lot of people are suffering from it. And the key part of the resolution of that is to do something to get out and about, even in this ice cold
sure.
temperatures, you know, to head out and shop or to go to the gym once in a while, not necessarily to meet a resolution, but just to enjoy yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we tend to do a lot of things that we don't enjoy in the wake of 3 weeks that we love.
Right. Is somebody,
can I ask you a question?
Oh, go on. Yeah, Wendy.
You know, when you're, again, social media is bad for all of us, I believe, because when you're looking at other people's family vacations, Christmas vacations, a lot of people celebrate the holidays in warm places, and you're looking at their photos and you're like, that is a well-grounded, awesome family. What's my family's problem? Do you feel there's a lot of comparison going on? Because I've been doing that a little bit, I got to admit.
Like you wouldn't believe, Wendy. The social media is insidious, and we are forever comparing our story to everybody else's story, and we tend to look up. I mean, I don't know what this is about our culture, but we tend to compare ourselves to people we think are having a better time or doing better in their lives than we are. And yeah, that is kind of a fundamental component of depression, feeling like, everyone's kind of beating me here and I'm not really enjoying myself the way I should. And that judgment alone, that self-judgment, takes us out of the game.
Is there a way to fix that? Is it just the realization that you can't? Yeah, I think
honestly,
that's part of it, right?
That's a big part of it, right? I totally agree. If you can avoid going on Facebook, I'm working with a few adults now, adults who are taking social media off their phones for a couple of months this time of year, in part because of what you're saying, Wendy, that, you know, like, yeah, this time of year, it's too hard to compare myself with somebody who's in Hawaii right now, you know, like, and having the time of their lives.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually a really sound idea, is to, or spend less time at the very least, staring at other people's stories. And the fact that you stare at Facebook for any period of time is agitating unto itself, you know, like just for the brain.
Right.
Yeah.
How do we get Donald Trump off of Twitter? Because we need to do that.
There's something called
big button.
There's something called the Goldwater Law or something that prevents me from answering that, Wendy.
All right. That's fine. That's right. If you take the person who suffers from post-holiday depression, are they prone to do that every year, or does it go on a year-by-year basis?
It tends to be very cyclical. So it is actually preventable. So if you're a person who sees that, you know, ooh, I get this dip every winter where I feel down, to plan for that and either allow that, oh, you know what, this is just a time where I'm going to have some downtime, that's not the end of the world, or I'm going to work to get myself out and about and moving this time of year instead of just sitting tight, then, you know, you can kind of plan for it and make yourself a little more resilient to falling into that trap again this year.
You know what worked for me for years? Now, this wasn't a depression, but every year in September and October, in my head, I'd say to myself, well, now we've got 9 months of cold weather. It's not going to be nice. You're not going to be able to play outside.
Yeah.
You can go outside every once in a while, but it's not going to be nice again until June. So what I would do is I'd say to myself every month, find a couple of things to look forward to. What's coming up in 2 weeks? What's coming up in 3 weeks and 4 weeks? It could be big things. It could be little things. Work like a charm.
Brilliant. That is so smart, Bill. And you're pointing out something that a lot of us do. We will take an enormous chunk of our time and write it off. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so September to May is effectively, you know, and I think a lot of us do exactly what you're saying. Those 8 or 9 months of the year, those are going to be pretty bad.
Right.
So I'm looking forward, you know, September 3rd, I'm looking forward to, you know, June of next year.
Yeah.
And we're just wishing our time away. That's depressing, you know, like by definition. So you're right, to build in some things that you enjoy. And I think it's important always to have something that you look forward to, even if you're not wealthy, to create something. We're going to go downtown into the city in a couple of weeks. We're going to head up to Wisconsin and just drive through for a while, you know, something that feels positive and upbeat, and it's something you can look forward to. I think that is a great kind of remedy to the post-holiday.
Maybe it's a movie that's coming out. Maybe it's a date that you have with friends that you're going out to dinner. It can be a little thing. It
little
can be a big
things.
Thing, but just in your head, no. There's good stuff down the road.
Because,
you know,
if you feel like there is,
I like to call that the dangling carrot.
Dangling
something good in front of you.
Yeah. Perfect, exactly.
And sometimes it can be a dangling carrot.
You can hang
a carrot somewhere and look at it.
Not cauliflower, though.
No. Who doesn't look forward to that?
That would break my resolution. What about this angle, the financial end of it? During the holidays, a lot of us tend to overspend, and you don't really realize it if you're putting it on a card. You go, I put plastic in a machine. It didn't cost me anything. And then all of a sudden, the bills come. I bet that's a contributor, isn't it? isn't it?
Definitely. But using your theory of kind of breaking things down, you know, I'm going to look at this month to month. If you look at that bill,
yeah,
you know, a lot of us look at the giant number and we panic instead of thinking, and if Terry Savage were here, she would probably slap me. But but if you think like, okay, if I break this down and I do this in reasonable increments over time, this will be less painful than it would be if I just stare at this giant number and this hole I put myself in. You
yes.
know? Yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question completely off the topic, but there's this video blogger. He's a guy named Logan Paul. I had never heard of him until about a month or two ago.
He is a jerk.
He showed up on some late night show, and everybody knew him and loved him, but I had no idea who he was. So he put out a video the other day. Evidently, in Asia, there's a place called the Suicide Forest.
Yeah.
It is, on all the planet, it's the place where most people tend to go to end their lives, very, very sadly.
Right.
So the nature of his video blog show is he goes places and has some quote-unquote fun with whatever's going on.
Right.
And he and his friends were walking through this forest, and they found a kid who had killed himself, a guy who had taken their own life. What are your thoughts on this? He has since apologized because he did a video where they were kind of taking this whole thing very, very lightly. What are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I actually saw parts of this video, and I get your point, Wendy. My initial inclination was, what a jerk. Especially, I'll share with you guys that in the past few weeks, I've been dealing with a number of teen suicides. So I always think about, like, families of people who are going through this, you know, and somebody who's treating it in any kind of cavalier way. It's really...
And the teenagers watch his YouTube videos.
Exactly.
That's what bothers me.
Exactly. So there's also that, like, that power of suggestion, right? That, you know, like, this is a way to gain some degree of fame. And kids who are suicidal are starting to use social media and YouTube to kind of... To lay out their message of despair,
right?
And this is their way of kind of preserving some degree of fame. And Logan Paul didn't forward that mission at all by putting out that video. I was really glad that he apologized for it.
Although, did you see the apology? Because it seems to me like the kind of thing he realized that his fan base was quickly shrinking as a result of this, so he was kind of trying to keep his head above water more than anything.
It's definitely damage control, no doubt. But I think it's a pointless thing to do, and it's not something that we should ever take lightly. You know, like because this happens in our culture more frequently than I think we know, because we tend not to talk about it. Obits tend not to say what's happened. I think to treat it lightly is a massive mistake.
What you just said is very interesting to me. Obituaries now are purposely leaving out, and a lot of times in news stories also they're leaving out that suicide was behind the death. Is that a good thing or is that not a good thing?
You know, I tend to think it's not in the big picture. The reason that they do that psychologically is that they're avoiding the idea of copycats, right? They don't want kids kind of doing the same method in the same spot. And this has happened in the past.
Yeah.
But by omitting the cause, what happened, we're creating this taboo around it, you know, and so we're kind of cloistering and not talking about an issue that is so vitally important to talk about a lot, you know. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we give kids permission to talk about being depressed, feeling suicidal, feeling hopeless, lift that taboo, and kids feel more open. They feel permission to talk about it. And I got to tell you, I really believe that kids are going to be far less likely to commit that act. I don't think they're so suggestible as a lot of the media would have us believe.
But the numbers have been beyond alarming in the last couple of years.
The numbers are definitely increasing. I think that has a lot to do with kind of perceived cultural pressure on kids that age.
Wendy, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And speaking of media, and I know just from taking journalism classes, and Kim Gordon can comment on this too, years ago when a story came up in the news cycle that it was a suicide, it was not reported at all. It's just so-and-so lost their life and nothing was mentioned.
Right.
And I am seeing a lot of obituaries now that are mentioning suicide and drug addiction more and more to try and help other families, because there have been just so many kids that have died at the hands of heroin, and their parents are trying to say, look, this can happen to you as well. And I've seen that a lot in obituaries lately.
I've seen that as well, Wendy, and a lot of families coming forth on social media and things, creating foundations for their kids who have taken their lives, who have been depressed. And I think that is all really, really positive, you know, and making the best of a really, really difficult situation. And you got to think that the opioid crisis, what you're talking about, is part of the answer there, right? Making that more visible and being clear how many people are affected. And it's not just who you're going to think.
You know, Wendy, from a news standpoint, just real quick, we don't report suicides unless it's something that is very exceptional or impacts other people in other ways. Otherwise, we try to stay clear of it, too.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I mean, now people hear about more of suicides and things like that in a social media setting as a way to help others. But
it makes sense.
Celebrities, Robin Williams, Chris Cornell.
Right.
You know, that has been reported.
Right. Right. And I suppose not reporting it, but letting the family take care of it takes away that, you know, gives them a little power in the situation.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, controlling the flow of information, because some people don't want that out there. And some families want to make that the kind of like legacy of the person.
Absolutely. If you want to hear more,
it is
If you want to hear more from Dr. John Duffy, you can. His podcast is available at WGN Plus. Again, the book is called The Available Parent. Or listen to him here every other Wednesday. Thank you, John. Have
Thank
a great
guys.
New Year.